The Path to Authenticity is brought to you by GIA Miami. Founded by world-class mental health experts, GIA provides advanced care for difficult-to-treat conditions, including anxiety, medication-resistant depression, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Using state-of-the-art methods, GIA can help people recover from conditions when more traditional approaches can't. Dr. Antonello Bonci has assembled an expert team serving international clientele in a modern and resplendent Miami setting. If you or someone you love is suffering from depression, anxiety, OCD, or other mental health concerns, call GIA at 833-713-0828. You can learn more about GIA by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting GIAMiami.com.
Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I am Mimi Langlois, and this is A Path to Authenticity.
If it's your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 204 for December 6, 2022. This interview, it's the first I did for the podcast. It's with my friend Mimi Langlois, who is an abstract expressionist painter, originally from Montreal, but living in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Really amazing human being. And I kind of worked out what I was going to do with this podcast in the process of interviewing her. I originally was going to write a piece, do a profile story on her. I spent a couple hours with her and recorded the interviews and then ultimately concluded, I don't really want to write about her. I'd rather have a conversation and record it. So I had been kicking around the idea of having a podcast, but wasn't sure what I'd do with it if I did have one. So this is where I kind of connected the dots and, the sound here isn't nearly as good as it would be if I did it today, but it was a great conversation and, you know, one worth sharing again. So I hope you enjoy it. Here you go. Mimi Langlois.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Thank you for joining me. I'm really happy to
It's my pleasure.
Here. I'm looking forward to hearing more about you. And, you know, we met a couple times before.
Yes.
And
more than a couple.
Well, yes, we've met many times.
Yes.
But we met for interviews a couple times
yes.
before. And so I've gotten to learn a little bit about you. So
yes.
I went back over my notes and I definitely have some questions for you that I think people will be interested in hearing. So you were born in 1935
yes.
in Quebec City.
Yes.
And, do you have, what's your earliest memory?
I will tell you, it's the day I was born.
No.
Really?
You can remember
oh, yes.
the day you were
born. Oh, yes. And, one day asked my mother, I said, Mom, I had the vision the day I was born, and it's really very clear in my memory. And I said, I didn't know. I thought I was born in the hospital. And I said, no. I said, it was in a room. And I, describe what I saw. And she said, yes, how do you know? Yes. And I remember my grandmama was there, and the doctor, the nurse. And I was telling her, and I said, why? You were so tired, and it was like if you were not there for a moment. And she was, oh, my God, what's going on? It's true. Yes, I have a good memory of my childhood and everything.
I never have met anyone before who could actually remember.
Oh, yeah, but I did that. Very early, I start meditation without that, not knowing it was that. Hmm. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you're the second oldest of
10 children.
Ten
yes.
Children.
7 brothers, 2 sisters.
Wow. Yeah. So what was your childhood like growing up with all those kids?
Yeah. But I have, I will tell you, my childhood, I had good and bad moments, of course, but the best and what I like to remember, of course, it's up to the age of 7, where I was with my grandparents. They were wealthy people, and they had time to take care of their older child, was me and my brother. It was so, the environment was so great. With arts, and what my grandpapa was, the story was telling, because he was a writer himself, and he's the one who started the first journal in Victoriaville, and he wrote the editorial, till he died at 80.
Wow.
But for me, that time, that 7 years, really mold me for the rest of my life, especially about arts, the manifestation of the soul. In that time, I had a grand aunt. At that time, in 37, she went to China and Japan and brought back furniture and painting and pottery. And to me, it was, oh, my God, I could spend hours just be with that.
Yeah.
Yes, and I was young. I was 4, 5, 6 years old.
So you were very intrigued by that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I think it was in my nature. Yes.
So, and when I look at your artwork, I definitely see that influence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How has Asian culture influenced your visual art?
Oh, completely. Because I always, even when I went to Japan, I felt at home. It's funny. I cannot explain all these things, but it really mold me in a way of.
You felt a connection to it.
Oh, yes. Definitely. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, when we talked before, we were talking about some of the important events in your life, and you told me about your first communion.
Oh, yes.
Tell me about what happened that day.
It's funny. I went back to Victoriaville to see that cathedral. I thought because of the remembrance of my first communion, but believe me, it's a very, very small church, beautiful, all in wood. And it was, as a child, the luminosity inside the church of that first communion. And after that, all the love around me, with my grandparents and, everything. I remember every second of it. Yes.
Wow.
And it's beautiful. It's more what I remember most is the, peace. Around all that, it's something I cannot describe, but I am.
So it was a connection that you experienced, and that was the first time that you had an
yes,
experience.
Being really aware. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I would, today, with the years, I could say It was my first connection with reality.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. So then that was at 7 years old?
Yes.
6 years old?
Yes, 6 years old.
And now at 6 years old, you went to live with the nuns, right?
Yes, yes. Oh,
so
yes.
Tell me the about convent. That. Tell me
yes.
about that.
The first experience with the nuns were beautiful. I was six, my first year. And after that, at seven, when I was 7:30, my father decided to go to the army and to go in another city. And then my mother decided to go and join him, and we were all separate. And this really did a big cut in my life in a way that it's like if I was in a paradise for 7 years, and then suddenly I'm in a place I didn't know. I didn't know where they put me, the nuns. I didn't know no one, separate from my brothers. This really, I had to come back to that separation many, many times in my life to really reconnect with my own reality, which is the reality in for me.
So that was a very traumatic experience.
It was, yes. But in that experience, at that place where they put me, the night was a nightmare, and I've been through that many times. But in the morning, what saved me is I suddenly, it was like a farm, and the noise of outside of the chicken and everything, I forgot everything, and I was back in what I am, in fact.
Yeah.
At that moment.
You were able to be in the moment.
Oh, yes. Yes. Be with myself, my real self. Yes.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing that at that young an age, you had that sort of metaphysical sort of awareness.
Yeah, but it's
well,
there.
I mean,
yes.
You know, most people you talk to, they develop that sort of an experience much later on in life, not before they're 10 years old. So that's very unique.
But it's unique to, I think, to have all the love I had.
Yes.
Around me at every second up to 7 years old.
Well,
this I realize today. Yes.
Well, and speaking of love, Mimi, one of the ways that I describe you to other people when I think about you, I think about how love just radiates from your face and your eyes, and you definitely light up a room when you enter it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Tell me, Mimi, we talked a little bit before about your life purpose, and to you, your life purpose is to be you.
Yes, spontaneity première. That's what I call it for years.
Can you translate that for me?
The raw spontaneity, if I can then translate, if it makes sense, the pure spontaneity.
Pure spontaneity, and you, and so you believe that the truest version of you happens spontaneously. Is that right? Is that what you would say?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And in my life, I call that serendipity. So many things happen. You know, to really to give me the best, to be able to give too. It's fantastic. When I look back, I do believe in existence, our pure existence. Yes, it's there, but we don't see it. That's the problem.
And we really are love.
Yes, definitively. Definitively. And the minute we are aware of it, it gives another dimension.
Yes.
Yes.
So spontaneity, that's a good way to transition into talking about your artwork a little bit. And But let's say before you learned everything you learned about spontaneity, before you became an abstract expressionist, you painted landscapes and still lifes, right?
Yes, because I had a phase where I start to doubt of myself completely. And when I went to, I got married and I went to Europe. And when I came back to Europe, I had, even with the two children, I had time to me and the facility. So I really doubt about myself and went to take some course how to do painting. And that's how everything started with serendipity, where I met Frère Jérôme.
Yes, yes. So I've wanted to talk
give
to
me
about,
back what I was.
So I have a note here about from our last conversation where someone said to you, "What you do is not art."
Yes, so that boy saved my life.
tell us about that story.
When I went to take this course, I had the skill to do nice landscape and flowers. So, and I sold everything the minute I did exhibit.
So now, just to clarify, the reason why you were painting landscapes and florals is because you knew they would sell. Is that right?
No, because it's because I thought so much of myself, I didn't know what art was. Even if I spend a whole year just visiting museum and castle and all whatever you want, where for me it was, this was like music. It was not something I had in my mind about art. I was looking at the skill. And then when I took this course, people are looking for something which secure them. So to so they go for a memory of something they seen or they dream of. To art, it's completely different. I realize after, because they asked me to do an exhibit for the opening of a big gallery in Montreal, and because they want to sell. So I said, sure. But for that exhibit, as you said, I did one painting my own, not with a memory, just from the silence, my own silence. And I asked her to put that painting with the other one. And then there is a little boy who came, and he said, "Oh, Madame Langlois, what you do is not art." So I said, "What is art then?" He said, "It's what we do with Frère Jérôme in the back of the college." Frère Jérôme was from College Notre Dame. And believe me, the day after I asked him where it was and all that. The lady who was there said, "Don't go there. He's a crazy man and he's dangerous and blah, blah." So I was there. And when I met him, I asked him, I begged him, because he didn't want to. When he looked at me with my new cars and my all the way I was dressed with signature, he said, "I don't think it's your place here." And I said, "I just get in. I saw what you do. And I feel at home. So I want you to come and see my exhibit." And he said, "Oh, yes, no." And he was a very special man. And then he came. And when he looked at everything, he really took the time to look at everything. And he said, "There is only one good thing, and it's that painting." And it was the one I did from my silence. And boy, did I add the lesson. And I worked with him 30 years.
So he was your master.
Oh, yeah. In a way that he was giving me back my confidence in what I was.
Okay.
Because in the middle, it was so much everything by the book with what the other one will say or think that believe me, at the beginning, I was lost in all that. But I was blessed. My husband was a great doctor, very well known. Had that soul, and he always agreed with what I was discovering about me. And
so he was very supportive of your
Oh yes, definitely. But always saying, "Don't tell anyone."
He didn't want his friends to know everything
you were up to. And even all the thing I went for monastery after, I went for diving under ice and all that stuff. And he always saying, "Mimi, do you really need that?" And I was saying, "Yes." So he was saying, "Don't tell anyone. Don't tell the family."
So tell me about Frère Jérôme.
Frère Jérôme, it was a little bit, I would say, like bourgeois in Canada and Polak in the United States, who changed the old...
Jackson Pollock.
Yes, Jackson Pollock, who changed... they were so much themselves that with their manifestation to him painting, and him, he was not only painting, he was talking to... he changed the way of seeing painting to and expressing art
to where it's really an outward expression of your inward experience.
Yeah, exactly. Yes,
and that's really what your art is, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. Definitively. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So, so he was an artist.
A great artist. Oh, yes, and it changed many, many things in the way. Of course, Quebec at this moment was in a big revolution of changing everything, you know. We were, the domination was the church, and he was himself belonged to the church, but he was against all that, and it was really special.
Yeah, he told me that he was a little more aligned with Eastern thought himself.
Yes,
right?
And even now it's difficult for the Quebecois to accept him. Yeah. Oh yeah. Even if he's dead for years.
So then, Mimi, tell me about how Buddhism became a part of your life.
I've been always very curious and a big reader. And then one day I start to read the book of Kaplow, who was one of the first American who wrote a book about Buddhists. He wrote here in the United States. And then I had my curiosity. I just went to his monastery and went for we call that a session. We spent 7 days in meditation and
so it
lecture.
It was a retreat.
Yes, a retreat. And then from that serendipity, I received from, I never knew who sent that to me, an invitation to go for a retreat in California with Sasaki. And don't ask me how it came, but I just told my husband on a Saturday, "Claude, if you don't mind, you'll be very busy next week. If you want, I will go to California for that retreat." I don't know who sent me that invitation, but it seems to be... You can... interview him.
Yeah, one of the things I forgot to mention before we started to record is to turn our phones on to silent. So this is a learning experience for me, this podcast thing and learning how to use all this equipment. As an astute listener of this particular podcast will probably be able to tell that we had to pause a couple different times and get things sorted out and
You know, we're moving mics around and stuff like that, so please be patient with us. But so the man who you went to the retreat to study under, what was his name?
Sasaki.
And now, is that the man who taught you karate?
No.
That wasn't...
Karate was another one.
What was his name? Because there were similar names, right?
No.
What was his name?
Gilbert.
Okay. I don't know what I'm
That's another
of.
Guy.
So you went to a seven-day retreat?
Yes,
retreat. Was it at Esalen or...
It was Mount Baldy in California.
Okay.
He has a monastery. And he died recently, maybe 5 years ago, and he was 103.
He died at 103?
Oh, yes.
So then that was a transformative experience too?
Oh, yes. It was very important. Very important. Yes.
And so, you know, Asian culture has had an influence on your entire life, right?
From the beginning.
And if you don't mind, for the listeners, how old are you, Mimi?
Yes, I'm 84.
No.
I'll be 84 in June. In fact, I will tell you the truth. I don't have any age. That's my reality. I don't believe in that. No, I will have to swallow that to believe in it.
Okay.
No.
Well,
and I'm very healthy. And,
well, you
but
know,
I learned from the Buddhist, though, how to cure myself. This I learned. And it's, I wish I can, even my student I had in Montreal, when people are not ready, it's no use. You know, they think you're crazy. So I say, okay. But I use it for myself.
Well, now... When I was on my way over here, I was talking on the phone to a friend and I was describing you to her. And I would have guessed that you were in your early 60s.
Thank you.
I mean, you look so, you don't look old enough to be 84.
I don't have any age. I don't have any age.
You
Come
definitely
on.
Don't. You transcend age.
I've just been 3 weeks ago for all the medical exam. The medical exam, and they couldn't believe what they saw.
Yes, you're a work of art yourself. So then you also, you're a black belt?
Yes.
Tell me about that. How did that take
place? I will tell you the truth. When my children went to college and after the university, I said I had plenty of time, and it was no question of money. So I decide now it's my turn. I always want to do martial art, and I will go for my pleasure. And I just start like this, one belt, second belt, third belt, and end up with the black belt. Same thing with diving. My husband was a good sport too, and for vacation we used to go to Club Med in different country. And I start to do diving. And then when I came back, I said, oh, they gave course here for the policemen, you know.
Yeah, well, in Quebec, it had to be under
yes.
ice diving.
Yes. And so I start these course and one certification, another one, and another one. And then I was the only woman and it was the certification for diving under ice. And... the guy say, oh, why don't you come? Come on. And my husband say, yes, if you go, I don't want to see it.
Just don't tell anyone.
No, but believe me, when they did a film about that, when I did my certification under ice, and he was watching TV, and what did he see? He saw me getting out of the hole.
Wow. Well, so, you know, so then when you at some point in Quebec you opened a retreat center of your
yes,
own?
Yes, I did.
And
yes,
what was that called?
I opened a completely school on the street, Maison de Zen. It's because I came after many retreats. I came back and Frère Jérôme said, "That's enough seeing you going there. Now you will teach us." And, you know, serendipity, The same day, I said to Frère Jérôme, no, Frère Jérôme, you are a saint, I'm not. And if I do that, I want to be paid, and I don't want to do that in where you work. I want a good place with his light and blah, blah. In fact, I didn't want to do it. And so I was giving all. So he said, let's have lunch together. And we went and he saw the superior. And the superior came to me and he said, Mimi, there is the key. You have the room you want for any weekend in the College Notre Dame. It was beautiful. And I said, yes, but now I want to be paid. He said, you will be. No problem. And I said, now I need the student. Frère Jérôme said, you have your whole class. We are 15 attending. And I did that for, 10 years, more than that.
Oh, my gosh.
But after, it was not at the college. I was giving really big retreat. So I was renting from the nuns, room. But before that, I opened my own school in Westmount on the street with martial art, with different style. And it stayed for a year. And after that, I realized I had to make a choice between the life with my husband or the life in the monastery and all that. And there were inside problems. I suppose it didn't belong to me because it would have solved.
So that's the way I see it. You say that it didn't belong to you. So this brings me to something I have observed about you, is that you use that expression a lot. And you tell me, you know, if it belongs to you, you will have it.
Exactly.
And that's a key part of your life philosophy.
Yes.
And so what that means to me is that, you know, no need for resistance, or it relax. It will come to you.
Yes, because I do believe the reality will take care of it.
Yeah, and there's no need to worry about what may or may not happen. We can just relax and enjoy the moment.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And things tend to turn out pretty well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But I had a very big hole in that.
Yeah.
In between.
So, talk about how you met your husband.
Was so sweet. I met other boys before, but
how old were you when you met him?
I met him. I was 17.
Okay.
No, 18, and I was starting the course to be a nurse at the hospital, and but the date I had, I was not happy with this guy. That's it. That's all. And my sister, who was going to a swimming pool, met him. And he said to my sister, if you had a sister like you, I will date her.
Only older, right?
Because because my sister was 13. And it was his first blind date, his first date.
So, and he was a lifeguard at the
lifeguard, and he was studying to be a doctor.
So he asked your little sister if she had an older sister.
Yeah, and he was shy guy. To have all these quality, he was shy. And he called me, and believe me, I was watching in the window. When I saw him, I knew he would be my husband. I knew he would be my husband. And we went out for a movie, and a nice Sunday after. And we were reading the same books, Dostoevsky. So we had something in common.
So you happened to be both reading Dostoevsky at the same time.
And he loved swimming, and I loved swimming. I was certified at that time with the Red Cross. And so I asked him for a cocktail I was giving during the weekend.
A cocktail party.
Party. And he said, oh, no. I said, I have so many years in front of me studying, So I'm afraid to fall in love, so I won't go. I said, it's okay, it's up to you, but it will be at 5 o'clock, that address. Mm-hmm. And he was there at 4.
Well, some powers we possess are greater than thought, right?
Yeah.
There was another force that was drawing him to you. So, and you told me that one time you asked him, many years later, you asked him, what it was about you that he liked. And tell me what he said.
Yes. Not long before he passed away, we used to have breakfast at the restaurant in the morning because we were able to talk and relax before he go to the hospital. And I asked him one morning,
He was a doctor.
He was a doctor, specialist, allergist, and the chief of the hospital. And I asked him, Claude, What do you like about me? Because he really spoiled me, I have to admit, on every sense. And I said, what do you like? I'm not like your colleague's wife. I never wash dishes. I never do anything in the house, but always been like a princess. And he said, Mimi, what I love so much about you, it's your fantasy.
You're a fantasy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He really loved you.
Oh, yes.
Definitely. He was captivated by you.
Oh, yes. Definitely. I was with, too. Yes, mm. Yes.
So, and you told me, one of the things you said to me when we talked before is that you definitely weren't a doctor's wife. What did you mean by that?
I mean, a person who does his washing on Monday, is ironing on Tuesday, and...
you had your own life, and you were always going to have your own life.
Yes, definitively, yes. And you respect that, too, which is, I realize, not the story of everyone.
Right. So, so you had two children, Michael and Genevieve.
Yes.
Where are they?
Genevieve is teaching mathematics. She has two children. She's in Pennsylvania. They were born in the United States, and we gave them the two citizenship.
Oh, that's great.
So that's why when my husband passed away, I asked right away to become American. But I have to admit, I always been pro-American.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Canada. There's no doubt. Quebec, but, so, American don't know what they are.
So how did you find your way to South Florida?
It's because my son was in South Florida. And he was in a divorce at that time. And I came because I really want the children to stay with their father.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to support him.
Because the ex-wife, who was a very nice person, wanted to go and live in Chicago. And I came here, and it was so great to have these two children. Oh.
So how many years ago was that, Mimi?
14 years ago.
So yeah. 2005.
Yes.
So you've been here a long time.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've been traveling. I went in India after and South America, back to Europe. Oh, no, I've been, you know.
So now I've been to your home several times now.
Yes.
And every time I come, there's different artwork hanging on the wall. So you're always painting.
Yes.
So tell me, what does a day in your life look like? What's the typical day for Mimi Langlois?
I spend many hours in the morning to be in silence. To me, silence is very important because from silence, I go to the unknown. And That's where is my life. And that's what is my expression from the unknown, which is I call the real knowing. Yes.
You have a lot of interesting expressions.
And from it start by just sometimes just listening, and from the listening, it just get in the silence, and from silence it goes to the pure knowing.
And then, so now, how does that translate into artwork?
Because
so you begin the day in silence.
Yes, and then I have my own breakfast by myself. Okay. And then I do my art mostly, not every day, but mostly. And I love to read too. I'm a big reader. At this moment, I'm reading Haruki Murakami, which is to me the greatest modern writer actual.
Murakami.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Haruki Murakami. Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyhow. And I love, I met people here, and I have different activity too, and I go for yoga. Mm-hmm.
So you keep busy.
Always been. And I always find the time to.
Always find the time to paint?
To do everything I want.
Yeah. That's great. Well, you know, one of the reasons that I wanted to do this podcast is, you know, it's very personal for me, because one of the challenges in my life is that when I was young, I was very impressionable, and I didn't really have the sense of self-worth to follow my heart or to follow my intuition. So I was inclined to listen to the people who discouraged me from doing the things that I really wanted to do. And it's taken me a long time to get back to who I really am. And this podcast is part of that. And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, I want to talk to people who are self-actualized, people who are really true to themselves. And you are definitely someone I see is very true to yourself. So, you know, saying all that, if you met a younger friend, or if you had something to pass on to someone who's trying to figure out their life, what would you say to him or her?
Please listen to your heart. It never be wrong. It will never be wrong. Yes. Hmm. And don't worry, your intellect and your art, you will have the rational in your heart. The communication will come by itself.
If you allow it and you listen for it,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. But silence is important. Silence is just, it's so easy. It seems to be strange, but just to listen, sit down and listen to your feet, listen to your body, let it be, and it silence will come by itself, and you won't know, but you will go, it will be easy.
Well, and it's such a challenge, I think, in our culture now to be grounded in that way, because there are so many stimuli we have, and the most dramatic expression of that is these handheld computers that we're all carrying around. You know, we're always accessible.
Yes.
And I often think about when I'm meeting someone new or communicating with someone, and there's all this text messaging going on, and the immediacy of that, and you know, sometimes my son, when the internet is down, the Wi-Fi is down, and he'll just keep tapping his screen thinking, you know, he doesn't understand. You know, I grew up where We mailed letters to each other and we called each other on the phone, and people couldn't just avoid each other. They, you know, they answered the phone and had to tell you they don't want to talk to you if they don't want to talk to you. And it's just a very different world now where, you know, it's harder to relax and tune out and find silence because there's so many forces out there that want to keep us distracted.
Yes, but when I'm talking about silence, I don't mean it's like honey all the time. It's right. Just to be aware when it hurts. Just be aware and be confident in yourself. It hurts. It's okay. Let it be hurts, and you will see at the end what will happen.
Yes, and. You know, because the hurt is what we're avoiding with all those
exactly.
distractions.
And even myself, sometimes I catch myself, oh my God, look at me. I'm running right, left. And I realize, sit down for a few minutes, okay? And let it be you're anxious or your insecurity or someone told me something I didn't like. And I was not present at myself at that moment. So I let that thing hurt me. So just let it be. And but it's life who learns. We learn day after day. And don't worry, you will always have someone or something to tell you, whoop, that's enough.
Well, and you know... one of the things I've learned about our emotional experience is that, you know, when I experience periods of sadness or whatnot, it can feel, at times, it can feel exhausting.
Exactly.
But what I have learned is that it's not the emotion itself that exhausts us. It's our resistance.
Exactly.
That is exhausting.
Yes.
And it takes that. Patience and it takes silence to actually be mindful of your emotions. And when you feel disturbed, to allow yourself to be disturbed and to let it pass through you. And what I've learned and what I believe
is the secret.
Is that if we don't do that, if we don't allow it to pass through us, then we carry it in our bodies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you see it. You can, if you really watch people when you walk through life, you can see the people who are carrying that around. They're tense. You can see it in their faces, you know, the stress. And so going back to you and the way that you light up the room, it's because you go into silence and you take care of yourself spiritually and emotionally. And it wouldn't be that. You wouldn't light up a room if you didn't do that. You wouldn't have that gleam in your eyes.
Exactly. Yes. But I realized today, the only way I can help the other one is by being myself. There is no way, to me, there is no intention to help someone. It's just to be myself, that it will work. It's like the sun. It doesn't say, I want to light this one, that one, or that flower. No, it's just the sun.
Yeah.
And that's the way, that's what I realized today. And it's great because I've been, when I start with Buddhists, I want to change everyone. I want everyone to paint. I want everyone to do Buddhists. And then I realized, whoop. Yes, I'm in the wrong way. Yes.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to see myself. I didn't accept myself. That's the problem.
Well, and that's another big lesson that I've learned is when something bothers me that I see in someone else, it's me.
Exactly.
It's me that's
yes.
bothering me.
Yes.
That's you know, there's some tough lessons we learn in life.
But when we are alert, we meet always the person to help us on that, you know.
Yes.
I found you and that group.
Yeah, the universe.
I call that serendipity.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful. So grateful. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, this has been a beautiful conversation, and maybe we can do it again sometime. I'm sure we'll talk one way or the other.
Yes.
With or without the microphones. But I really appreciate you taking the time. And before we end, I want you to talk about where someone can find your work.
At this moment, I have, for 5 years now, I'm with the DTR Gallery in Palm Beach.
And they also have locations in New York and
yes,
one,
but so. They have many artists. So I only have one painting at a time. But they can see me on. You can see all my work on Facebook and Instagram. And if you're really interesting, you can reach me by my website. Mm-hmm. And we can always arrange something,
right.
You know, through my gallery, or we will see.
Yeah.
Because at this moment, I'm ready to have an exhibit, a big exhibit. But when it will be really for me, it will open the door.
Yes.
That's
yes.
The way I see it.
It will.
I don't stop create. Saying for a show or for a gallery. No. They come and, you know.
It happens when it happens.
Oh, it happens for 50 years.
Well, and so yeah. if listeners want to get a look at your work, there's a page on my blog that features a slideshow of a lot of
That's
examples
very
of
nice.
Your work.
Thank you very much.
And also your Instagram handle. There's a link to your Instagram profile
yes.
on my website and your website. And I also provided a link to the gallery so listeners can find, you know.
Yeah, but they can go through you
yeah.
and then you can come to
if
me.
If they would like to.
And
absolutely.
We can manage that. I'm open.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Mimi. I really, really appreciate
you.
It. Bye. There you go, another episode in the books. Thanks for listening. You can learn more about the show and this episode's guest at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you enjoy this episode, please share it with someone. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Every little bit helps. I want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. If you're so inclined, check out the Patreon community. As soon as I do these interviews, I upload them to Patreon, where the content is only available to patrons and for just a couple bucks a month. I usually post audio content there, exclusive audio content, probably 8 times a month, if not more. And as these new episodes are released, as soon as they're done, they're available to patrons. So sometimes that might be 2 weeks before an episode is released, or even longer. Usually it's a few days. Anyway, if you want to support the show, that's a great way to do it. So thanks again for investing your time. It's a big deal to me. Thank you for supporting me and supporting the show. I hope you keep coming back. Be nice.
That's our story. I hope you enjoyed the punk rock opera. one last piece of music for you. Goes like this.
Okay, go.
Thank you. Good night.